Wonderful to be with you again. Since in the prayer we said we shouldn't, I won't grumble about the heat. But I noticed it. So glad that you're back and grateful for the opportunity. This lesson was chosen with our youth in particular, since it's a day in which we celebrate our college ministry. We're so glad to have the college students. I live with them, and I kind of like them. And so I'm glad that Del Rado opens its home to our college students and to our youth, and glad that you are here as well. And it's entitled, Time to Climb Mars Hill. Familiar text, so not going to necessarily discover anything new, but this is what prompted me to go there. It was 15 years ago. I'll never forget Maxine Timmerman. I wish I could tell you that I know she's doing well and alive, but she was about 85 back in 2002. When I looked it up, tried to locate where she was in Arkansas or Canada, I couldn't locate it. I saw that her husband had passed away in 2009. S.F. Timmerman was his name. He was born in 1918. I don't know her date of birth, but I reckon somewhere around there. So in 2002, she was around 84, 85. And she was one of many people during the 2 years that I worked and lived in Athens, Greece, that came my way. I remember when I lived in Arkansas, nobody came there. But if you live in Florence, Italy, or Athens, Greece, everybody comes. And of course, it was our privilege to take people around, sometimes for tourist reasons, other times for spiritual reasons. Maxine Timmerman, she was unique. She was 84 years old, and she was the wife of 68 years of a gospel preacher that had gone to work in Tennessee. That's where he started, in East Tennessee, and then they'd gone to Belgium. So she had to learn, while raising four children, she had to learn French, and she spoke it fluently, and I don't, and I was amazed. And then they moved to Canada and Ontario and Quebec, Canada, and they continued their ministry among the French-speaking Canadians there, and it had been a lifetime. Once upon a time, missionaries thought that once you started that, you were supposed to do it all your life, like 50 years. Well, nowadays we got planes, so we can come home every few years from faraway lands. If you study the history of mission work of the early 20th century, you'll find that missionaries of ours that went to China, well, they lived and died there. Because you couldn't catch a plane to come back. The boat to get over there took 2 weeks, you know, and 2 weeks to get back, and you just didn't have the money. Times have changed. She came to Athens, Greece. She was retired. She and her husband, they did. And she said, I want to go to Mars Hill. I want to go to Mars Hill. I tried to say, I understand, but ain't no way. I was thinking, you know, okay, there's slippery rocks there, no steps. I told her that. You're going to have to look at it from 50 yards below, but you can't go up Mars Hill, and not at 84. She had a sparkle in her eye. She was alive, but her body, you know, it showed the signs. And I said, no, I do not want to send a precious, gracious, lovely Christian lady back home in a casket. I don't want to do that. I don't want to be responsible for that. And she looked at me and said, I have come this far. I am going to climb that hill. And I saw in her eyes that there was no turning back. So I asked for her permission, put my hands all over her in that process, and I asked her husband too. Because there ain't no way she was going to get up that hill, but definitely down it, without restraints of some kind. And so she did. And so we did. Why did she want to go up Mars Hill? Why does an 84-year-old lady come clear across the world and put her life at risk, her bones for sure? Why? What's important about a rocky, craggy rock in Athens, Greece. I mean, what's important about it? Well, you know the story. I'm just reminding you. I'm not the teller of the story. Luke is. There's a reason for which this place, this geographical place in our world, is worthy of an 84-year-old lady who has spent 50 years on Mars Hill, the spiritual one, saying that I want to go on the physical one now. Because that, among other things, has been the inspiration for my life in service to God, in mission work, etc. I want to climb Mars Hill. It started when Jesus of Nazareth, as he was departing or leaving the world in which he lived of 20 centuries ago when the Romans were in charge, said to 11 scared men, he said, "You need to take what I've shown you, taught you, and you need to take it to the whole world." He said that to 11 fishermen and tax collectors. And he said, "Take it to the world." And they actually did. Now, they weren't alone. They were given a helper, a comforter, Holy Spirit, which is our helper too in our times. We're not orphans. We're not doing this alone. We cannot do it alone. Go into all the world. And so they did. An apostle that was chosen later personally by Jesus as he appeared to him, his name is Paul, that's his Greek name. He will be one of the key elements that bring the gospel to Greece because he spoke Greek fluently. And all 13 of his letters in the New Testament are in a very beautiful Greek. And so he went on many missionary journeys. He was the only one that was single. And so he took off from his starting point of Antioch of Syria, and he went and he went and he went and he traveled. On his second missionary journey, which lasted about 3 years from the year 49 to about 52, he, for the first time in his life, he's a man at the early spring of the year 50, is about 45 years old. He will get on a boat and head across the Aegean Blue Sea and dock in the port of Neapolis and then hit the cities of northern Greece and Macedonia called Philippi and Thessalonica and Berea. Then there will be a plot against his life, so he will have to get on a ship and leave his companions. They are called Timothy and Silas, and he will have to make his way down to the great city of Athens. He's never been there. And he's not going there the way that he'd like, which is, you know, not under duress, not under threat of life. He's having to go there to flee being persecuted because of his faith, because of sharing his faith with people in the northern part of Greece. So there is Athens there on the map, and that line takes you to Athens, Greece, and that's where Paul arrived in the spring of the year 50 AD. And Acts chapter 17 and verse 14 says this, "Then the brothers immediately sent Paul off on his way to the sea, but Silas and Timothy remained there. Those who conducted Paul brought him as far as Athens, and after receiving a command for Silas and Timothy to come to him as soon as possible, they departed." Paul traveled with other brothers, but not on this day. On this day, a couple of more brothers from the young church in Berea accompanied him on a ship along the coast of Greece until he was far enough from danger from northern Greece in southern Greece in Achaia in the great city of Athens. And they came into that port, and then he got off the boat and he waved at them as they went back home, and he was alone in a city of about 50,000. Today it's a lot bigger than that. 50,000 doesn't sound like much, but if you're alone, now, that's a little different. And if he didn't plan on going there, it's a little different. Although Paul has a resilience about him, he has a God is with me attitude, which has accompanied him for the last 15 years, 16, ever since he met the resurrected Lord and decided he's going to give it all, give everything. Live or die, that's up to God. What I'm going to do is I'm going to heed to that call. Go ye into all the world. So he's alone in the city of Athens. We have archaeological remains now today of the Athens of Paul's time, and we'll take you through just a few of those, but the Acropolis is the place where the temples of the gods were, and we're going to have to look at those for a second as we consider the spot where Mars Hill is, which, of course, is where we're going, where he's going, and where Maxine Timmerman insisted ongoing. So, the Romans had conquered Athens about a century and a half before. They owned all the world. But they had left the Greeks to kind of govern themselves. And Athens, the great cradle of theater and of philosophy and of democracy. Of course, the Romans were not democratic, but everything that kind of had been the greatest innovations of the world in the last five centuries had all come from Athens. Athens was the place. Now, it had really declined in population lately, but still, the aura of Athens, the way in which it was perceived. And I wonder if Paul, who'd never been there, could speak Greek fluently, if he wasn't a little bit in awe when he got off that ship and he was alone and he had to walk 4 or 5 miles up the road. This is the modern day bay of Piraeus in Athens, and there are tankers. And yes, the Greeks that have been sailing the seas ever since 3000 before Christ are still there, and they're delivering oil all over the world. And that's what they do. They are captains on ships in the bay of Piraeus in Athens, Greece. Athens, Greece today is 5.5 million people. There are 11 million Greeks in the country of Greece, and half of them live in the capital. It wasn't that big back when Paul was there, but still, it was awesome. It was, for a man that was the most trained academically of all the apostles, this was still daunting. He could speak at least 3 languages fluently, but still, wow, in Athens, and there he is, and he... While Paul was waiting for them in Athens, he couldn't wait for Timothy and Silas to come back. His spirit was provoked within him as he saw that the city was full of idols. His spirit was provoked, if I am allowed to read a little bit into the wording that Luke uses here. He was upset. Maybe that's one way to read it. He was overwhelmed. He was human, like me and you. And he saw that a whole lot of people, some of the smartest people in the world, some of the people most revered in the world, were on a bandwagon to nowhere. And they had a really nice wagon to take him there. Nowhere. He was provoked. Idols. That's man-made gods. We like to think in our day that we don't do that, but we do. We have all kinds. Sometimes it's a sports team. Sometimes it's a show or a musician we idolize. We make idols. Anything that consumes our money and our time. Maybe it's politics. I don't know. Maybe it's a false god. Maybe it's a counterfeit Jesus. Maybe it's not the church that Jesus established as the head of, but some other group that wants to be the church but doesn't look at the instructions and follow them. He was provoked in his spirit. He is most probably going to be walking on the Panathenaic Way. It's the main road that went from the port of Piraeus 5 miles up to the heart of the city, which is the Agora, which is the marketplace. All Greek cities had a main marketplace, Agora, and that's where there was the speaker's corner, and there were all the things that matter. You could get anything in the Agora. But the Agora of Athens, the most famous city in the world, was right in the shadow, right at the feet of the, wow, there it is, the most famous temples from the classical period of Athens of the 5th century before Christ. Took 11 years to build the Parthenon with some of the money from a league that the Athenian politician Pericles had put together. Lots of money. It's their version of St. Peter's Cathedral, except it was dedicated to the goddess Athena. And so at the end of a walk of 5 miles, looking at busts and statues all along the way, like an open-door museum, he gets to the main attraction, which is the Acropolis with the temples to their gods. This is the view from what we will call Mars Hill down to the Agora, where you see all those trees today as the remains, the ruins of once the heart of Athens, the heartbeat. That's where you will find the place where Paul, for weeks by himself, will have to dare to share who he is and who is this Yeshua? Who is this Jesus, you call him? Who on earth is he? Never heard of him. Over to the right in the image, you'll see that modern-day Greeks have reconstructed one of the incredible stoas. Those are porticos that are covered, that are 2 to 3 stories high. Oh, they had buildings. They had impressive stuff. Kind of like we have impressive cathedrals today. And we are reminded it's not about that. Never has been. Never will be about that. There's the Stoa of Athalos that had been built about 200 years before Paul got there in the spring of the year 50 by himself, looking at all the idols that were there. Now, what are going to be your talking points here? What are you going to say? Think I'll just be sightsee and wait for my two companions to come, because I don't like this solo stuff. Paul never did. That was nearly impossible for him, I think, even though that was not his favorite way to be alone and in the midst of a definitely antagonistic crowd. These are not going to be too receptive to any lesson you have to give. They are skeptics. They think they're smarter than anybody else in the world. And they think they know better. They already have the answers. And you come from, where are you from? Tarsus. Well, you can speak Greek very well. You know, kudos on you. Well done. But what do you think you're going to bring that we already don't have or don't know? You come from the East? What do you know? This is going to be kind of the attitude. So, he reasoned in the synagogues with the Jews and the devout persons. He found those that believed in the one God, Yahweh, Elohim. And in the marketplace, now that was a little hostile crowd. In the synagogue, he was preaching to his own people, and he was trying to tell them about the Messiah had come. That's the main lesson there, because they were supposed to be awaiting for the Messiah. But outside of the synagogue, when he went to the marketplace, well, he was there every day with those who happened to be there. So he did not take a cruise in the Mediterranean. I don't think he liked the sea very much. And he stayed in Athens, and every day he must have sometimes made himself get up and go. He went to the public square and he looked for anybody that would want to talk about religious things. And a lot of people must have sneered him. You can stand on the speaker's corner. It's there. And anybody can talk about anything except politics. You can talk about religion. But anybody can also sneer and jeer, and throw banana peels at you. So, yeah, the speaker's corner is not all it's cracked up to be. You don't get respect. What you get is, you get the ears of somebody for a while, but then all it takes is somebody that thinks they know better, and you will be interrupted. But he went there every day. No record of how many times he was interrupted. No record of how many times he'd have said, "That's it, I've given it a shot, I quit." You know, I've been doing this for 15 years. God, how much longer do I have to preach to a hostile crowd? They think they know better. Well, let them be. Well, God evidently doesn't desire that, because we're here in 2017, and evidently God has postponed the coming of his son so that a few more would hear his word and be brought to the faith in Christ that this man Paul has on this day. There in the Agora, he must have walked by this. Now, it's in ruins today, but it was a place where they had all the busts of the heroes of the Greek history. You know, eponymous heroes, they were called. It was like the greatest. It was like all the statues of heroic figures. And he's walking by those, and they're like a history lesson. And what he's thinking is, you know, you didn't know the God that made you, but even though you didn't know him, He knew you, and he was with you even in battles. He was there when you had economic crises and difficulties and were threatened by the Persians. And God's always been there. You just didn't recognize him. You didn't look for him. You were busy making up false gods. He's been there all along. That's what he was undoubtedly thinking. Well, some of the guys that were in charge of the intellectual atmosphere of Athens, they were serious. They were the two most famous schools of philosophy of the day. Philosophy is a discipline of mankind that the Greeks began, and they're pretty good at it. And the guys in charge now are the Epicurean and the Stoics. And the reading says some of the Epicurean and Stoic philosophers also conversed with him. And some said, what does this babbler say? The word there, spermologos in Greek, means, is not a nice word. It says he's just blah, 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 blah. That's what it sounds like. Others said he seems to be preaching a foreign divinity. Never heard of Yeshua. Who's Yeshua? Because he was preaching Jesus and the resurrection. Please make note, resurrection was a concept that the Egyptian had, and the Greeks had too, in one of their gods that was killed because he stole some stuff from heaven, so the gods punished him, and then he was put back together. And that was the beginning of Greek medicine as we know it. But that's mythology. That's just made up stuff to explain something. How the Greeks invented modern day medicine as well, and medical schools and things like that. He's preaching foreign divinities. Never heard of the guy he's talking about. He's preaching Jesus. And he says he came back from the dead, the resurrection. This is the landscape where that conversation was taking place. What you got here is two of the Titans statues, and that's the entrance to one of the major concert halls. And you're in the agora, you're in the marketplace, and in the background, if you look in the back, you'll see the temples of the Greek gods that are there. Athena and Poseidon and Nike, they're up there. And they live up there. Now, it's not the highest spot in the plain of Athens, but it's a very important spot. That's the context in which Paul is speaking about a god that doesn't have a house, doesn't have a statue, and does not have a high spot like these guys have. And you gotta somehow sell that to these people. Now, mind you this, these philosophers, like many people today, are hypocrites. And what they mean by that is they're defending the gods, but they don't really believe in them. They are the minority of Greeks that really don't believe in these gods anymore. But since they are the caretakers of the tradition of Greek culture, they pretend like they're insulted when he says, oh, by the way, the real one true God, he doesn't live in places that your sculptors build or your architects design. They're being hypocrites, but they are in charge, and they can throw Paul in prison if they want to. They took him. After listening to him in the marketplace for a while, they took him. I don't know what that means. It doesn't mean you grab him by the shoulders or simply went up and say, you need to come with us. And Paul would say, you already know who they were, no doubt. Paul might have said something like, do I have to? I don't think he had a choice. And they brought him to the Areopagus. Now, I'm going to take you on a hill. Areopagus is Mars Hill. Ares is the god of war, Mars. And Pagos in Greek means hill. Mars Hill, that's what Areopagus means. And I have 90% assurance that it's the hill we're talking about. May we know, here's the question, may we know what this new teaching is that you are presenting? You bring some strange things to our ears. We wish to know, therefore, what these things mean. We want to know, what on earth are you talking about? What is this brand of Christianity that you say you practice and you believe in? Who is Jesus to you, I might say. Now, some say that the meeting place of the Areopagus was down by this, the best preserved Greek temple in all of the world. It's the temple to Hephaestus, the god of the underworld. But I don't think so. The historical evidence seems to point to the hill, the one that Mrs. Timmerman had to climb on that day, the hill, and the one that I think Paul climbed on that day when they said, come with us. You're going to need to explain yourself to a smaller audience. It's going to be just us, you and us, and you're not going to have the crowds. Paul will say in one of his letters, I really didn't have the art of gab. I'm not that good of a speaker, is what he will say. Now, he's either being humble, which is possible, or he's being truthful, which is possible too. It may be that he wasn't that great a speaker. You might have not hired him in your church because he wasn't good enough to speak. I hope not. I hope we'd have hired Paul, right? By the way, he was single. Do we hire single people? That's another question. No, I don't think it was there. I think it's the hill. This is a beautiful temple. It's one of many that are down there. He's now halfway between the temples above and the temples below, suspended between heaven and earth. Paul is on a hill, and he's under duress, and he's under strain. And you need to explain yourself. Who on earth are you talking about? The parentheses that Luke throws in is just marvelous. It's just Luke says, he's a doctor, he's a pretty educated guy. He says, you know, my time was just full of people, especially Athens. All the Athenians and the foreigners who lived there would spend their time in nothing except telling and hearing something new. If it's old, yeah, it's already been tried. We want something new. You got something new, then we'll hear you. If you got something old, then that's the problem. He's going to bring up something old, resurrection. That's going to kill his speech. He's going to be interrupted because he brings up something old. Old is, by the way, that's not just the Athenians. That's us today, too. So, right down from there is the speaker's corner, and they grab him and they say, you need to come up to where we meet. Paul can see from where he's at on that hill. He can see the place where democracy was born right here, 4.5 centuries before. He can see the Stoava Attalos right over to the left. He can see these marvelous places, geography, and it had to be easy to get distracted. Definitely had to be easy to shrink back and, you know, say something less. And then there's that which is right behind him. It's in ruins today because of an explosion in the 17th century, but back then it was in full splendor with its Pentelian marble and 11 years to build, and the best architects of the 5th century before Christ, Callicrates and Ictinus, and the best sculptors that there were, and they had built this marvelous temple to the goddess Athena, Parthenon. And then there was the Acropolis itself with its walls and the temple to Poseidon, and the temple to Nike, and just snaking up the sacred path were all these priestesses that were carrying offerings to the gods and going through the propyleion, the entrance to the whole sanctuary up above. And wow, the extravagance, the procession, the organization, the money, the presence, physical presence, all of that. Will men really do that? Make up gods and then put that much effort and money in? We always have, tragically. What do you think the golden calf was to the Israelites? It was a mistake. But they too, who knew better, had been fed by God. Manna every day. They lost it. So the Acropolis is behind him, and he's supposed to defend himself, an apology. Apology not meaning I'm sorry, but this is who I am and what I believe. In the shadow of the Acropolis in Athens in the spring of the year 50, Paul will give his speech. I reckon he went into the Parthenon, or not in, but you can only go outside, only the priest go inside, and I reckon he saw the statue of Athena, 40 foot high, and he's got to talk about why that statue and that temple and all that they are so meticulously engaged in is all for naught. It's a gigantic distraction to the real God. This is the temple of Poseidon, the god of the sea. They were sea people. They needed to give offerings to the god of the sea, they thought, because they didn't want to be fish food. They didn't want to drown. And they needed him to be nice and not throw storms at their fleets. They had been worshiping him for centuries. Now, had it worked? Of course not. They're false gods. They don't exist. They can't hear. They're not there. The tradition continues. And today these philosophers are going to put Paul under duress because he's there to talk about the one true living God. So he climbs Mars Hill. I want you to think, is it possible Can you imagine what he was thinking while he was climbing that hill that day? And then he stood by himself in the midst of the Areopagus, being now the group of men that meet on that hill, and he began carefully his speech, which may be a summary. Maybe we don't have all of it. Luke may have summarized it, but I know it's interrupted. And it goes like this. Men of Athens, I perceive that in every way you are very religious. As I passed along and observed the objects of your worship, I found also an altar with this inscription, to the unknown God. What therefore you worship is unknown, this I proclaim to you. I think it may be that Paul is complimenting them here. It may be. In all his letters, even when he's correcting a congregation, he starts out by saying, listen, I got to chew you out in chapter 2, but in chapter 1, I'm going to recognize all the good stuff you have first. But I'm not sure that being religious is a compliment, because it can mean superstitious too. And superstitious is a different thing. Religious means you're looking. Religious means, wow, you're using Ouija boards to look. It's a little, well, you know, you're going to palm readers. So what was he saying? I'll leave you to decide, but either way, he says, I've been around for a few days. I have looked at the things that you put your heart and your money into. And I saw one that was even afraid to have missed a god. The dognostotheo, to an unknown god. I'm going to tell you about that one. Paul uses that as an intro into his lesson, which is going to go like this. The God who made the world and everything in it, being Lord of heaven and earth, does not live in temples made by man. Nor is he served by human hands as though he's needed anything, since he himself gives to all mankind life and breath and everything. So, you know, all those priestesses that are snaking up right behind him, snaking up into the propylaeon and into bring the offerings of the day to the goddess, well, nobody's home. But God has been there all along. He himself gives all mankind, life and breath and everything. All mankind. He made from man every nation of mankind to live on all the face of the earth, having determined allotted periods and boundaries of their dwelling places, that they should seek God in their hope that they might feel their way toward him and find him. The first point you might extract, he's saying, God is the God of the Greeks too, even though in your history you have been searching the divine through pagan man-made gods for centuries. You chose Athena 15 centuries ago to be your goddess. She's still not helping you much at all because she doesn't exist, but nice temple you got behind there. He was involved in your history through even your periods, the Mycenaean period, the Minoan period, the geometric period, the archaic period, the classical period, the Hellenistic period, all the periods of Greek history, God was there. God knew. God was present. He wasn't somewhere else. He wasn't on the other side of the moon. He was there. God is the one who created you Greeks. God is the one who created you Alabamians. Not somebody else. Our God is. And by the way, he's been sustaining you, Alabamians, and you, Greeks, from the beginning. God is a sustainer. And since quoting the Old Testament will do him absolutely no good with these philosophers, he quotes from a Greek poet and a Greek tragedian. And he does it by memory. And they had to be impressed at this. Yet he is actually not far from each one of you. God is not an absent God. He's not gone on a vacation somewhere. He didn't create the world and leave. In him we live and move and have our being. And he quotes a tragedian Menander here. As even some of your own poets have said, and they recognize the poet that he's quoting here, we are indeed his offspring. The question is, who's he? Who's his? I'm telling you. Being then God's offspring, we ought not to think that the divine being is like gold or silver or stone, an image formed by the art and imagination of man. So there it was, visible to all from the eastern door. You couldn't go in, but there it was, built by Phidias, sculpted and covered, layered in gold. And then it was made out of ivory feet and 40 foot high. Athena, she had Nike, winged goddess in her hand, and then she had the shield of war, because she was a war goddess, and she was the goddess of wisdom, and she was totally fictional. That's a very nice statue. Very nice. God does not want you to make a statue out of them, or a picture, or God is spirit. God is spirit. And God is a judge. He created you. He's taken care of your crops and your battles, and he's been with you, and he's given health to your children, and he's guarded you all along. And then God's, now I am here, and God's going to hold you accountable to what I'm about to say. Watch out. This is where, I guess, if they'd had it, they'd had the invitation song, but they didn't have it. The times of ignorance God overlooked, but now he commands all people everywhere to repent. Because he has fixed the day in which he will judge the world in righteousness by a man whom he has appointed. And of this he has given assurance to all by raising him from the dead. This is the end of Paul's speech. He's interrupted when he brings up an old idea, that one of resurrection. But before he's interrupted, he says, and you are going to be responsible for what you hear. Once you know, once you hear, then you're under the judgment of God. He's the one who created you. He's the one who sustains you, but he's the one who will judge you. There's the rock. That's the speech that he gave on a rock. And that's the reason why Mrs. Timmerman wanted to climb that rock that day. Not because there was something magical. Actually, here's the point. For 50 years, she had already been on Mars Hill. You see, she had been standing up with courage, with devotion and with preparation, together with her husband. She had gone to Belgium and learned a language, and she had been to Quebec and Canada, and she had dedicated her life. She had been climbing Mars Hill every day of her life. And today, she wanted to go on the physical one, but she'd already been there. On that outcropping of a rock, where Paul stood by himself, under risk or threat of life, and stood up for what is true, and what is right, what makes life worth. See, I'd love for all these young people right here to decide at this age to find your way up on Mars Hill and stay there. So that when you are 84, if you've not been to the physical one, you'll go there. But you will have been there spiritually from now on. It's time to climb Mars Hill. It's time to go there. You can do it at any age. But if you do it when you're young, makes all the difference. Climb that hill. 2 minutes and the lesson's yours. We live in a world that's still, like Paul's, unacquainted with the living God, the real Jesus, and the true church. There are a lot of people that use the name Jesus and use the word church. But unless it's the New Testament story of Christ, New Testament story of the church, then they're still unacquainted. We still have a job to do. We still will seem strange to people, like Paul was to them on that day. They will call us fanatic. They will have to see us as zealots. Zealots means you're on fire. They'll have to see us as religious zealots. That's just going to have to be required and necessary. Our world, like the time of his, is still obsessed with the latest product, the latest now, the latest idea, the latest trend in worship and in other things. It's called nowism. It was trendy in the first century AD among the philosophers, and it is still today. We need to recover the passion, the courage, the determination of Paul. Mrs. Timmerman had it, and she was 84. There's no excuse. We cannot expect any less if we're going to do it this way than they had in the first century. Opposition, be derided, ostracism. because we still have the same job description. If you're a Christian, this is your job. It's simple. You're to climb Mars Hill. That's your job. That's what you're supposed to do. So, maybe you're already there. God bless you. Maybe you're looking at it from below, and it's a steep climb from where you're at right now. But if you're a Christian, you need to climb Mars Hill. If you're not a Christian, what God do you serve? You will serve a God. There's only one true God.